ברוכים הנמצאים. I accepted upon myself over the summer to come visit this very, very great synagogue, Sha'arei Tefillah. The synagogue in town, run by my good friend Rabbi Dweck, who's, I think, doing a stupendous job. Such a beautiful synagogue and beautiful congregants, men and women. And in a short amount of time, he's revived the neighborhood, without a doubt. And whatever I could do to help him, not that he needs my help, I mean, he surpassed me a long time ago. But I did accept upon myself to come and give a little Devrei Torah on Tuesday nights until they get tired of me, and then I'll go back to Brooklyn. The rabbi asked that we give this shiur Le'ilui Nishmat Yaakov ben Amalia Ruach Hashem Tenihanu Began Eden Uti Nishmatot Tzor Rabbi Tzor HaHayim. So they give me the hardest parasha as the opening derash, Parashat Chukat. That's what we're reading this week. It says over in the house called the Red Cow, Parah Aduma. The Torah talks about a certain rare breed of a cow that's all red. I think the Gemara says there might have been only 9 of them in the world since, you know, Moshe. And when the 10th one is revealed, that's when Mashiach will come. You always hear in the news, they found the 10th one. There's always some sort of excitement when they think they found the 10th one. Anyway, what's the story of this red cow? Basically, they would burn it into ashes and mix it with some water and make a potion. And anybody that had contamination, what type of contamination? A corpse tum'ah, which means they came in contact with a dead body, or God forbid, they went to a funeral, or they went to a cemetery. So you don't see it, but something comes on the person, some type of religious contamination. And the only way to get it off is through this sprinkling of this special waters with the special ashes, sprinkling it on the 3rd day and then the 7th day, and it's got to be done by, you know, certain people. It's a whole to do. It means you could put all the Purell and all the shower and power wash yourself, but the tumah is not coming off. There's only one way to get the tumah off, and that is through this paraduma. That means that today everybody is impure. You must have went to Israel once and you walked over a cemetery, you're out. You must have went to a funeral once, I'm sorry, you're out. Even if you went to a hospital, you know, there's a morgue, in the downstairs, probably there was a corpse there, boom, you're out. Or you touched somebody that went to a funeral. So most of the people today are ritually impure. When Mashiach comes, there'll be a long line, all of us included, will have to get sprinkled before we can go to the Beit HaMikdash. You might have been to Jerusalem, and you see there's a ramp goes up to the Harabayah, goes up to the Temple Mount. And it says on the sign, religious Jews should not go up to this point, and it's subject to a big punishment, which is called Isur Karet. Why can't we go up to the Temple Mount? It would be beautiful to go up there, because we're Tameh. And you cannot trample on God's grounds, ritually impure, even if you have good intent. That is forbidden. I don't know why it says religious Jews. It's any Jews, actually. But I guess religious Jews are the only ones that are practicing. But they're the only ones that care. But the point is, the Parah Aduma is non-existent today. On the way in, I saw something that Rabbi Kochida said. Rabbeinu Chaim Yosef David Azulai. He wrote many books. One book is called Midbar Kedemot. He wrote it according to the Aleph Bet. He has like 20 entries on the Aleph and then Bets and Gimas. So he has an entry called Efer. Efer is the ashes of the Parah. And he writes that there's a tradition that the rabbis of the Talmud had the ashes of Parah Aduma. And he says they had to have it because there's no way they were able to reach the spiritual heights that they reached, unless they had this tahara. which was a Hadush to me. Then he goes on to say, he says, and this I never saw written, and nobody ever talks about it, but he says, I know in my gut that this is true. He says, the great rabbi called the Ariza, Rabbi Yitzhak Luri Ashkenazi, which lived about 500 years ago in Tzfat, he says, I have no doubt in the hour Navi came and sprinkled them with the Parah Adumah. He says, there's no way he could have revealed all the Kabbalah that he did unless he had the Tahara. He says, again, I didn't see it. Nobody talks about it. I'm sure the Ariza was modest about it, but there's no question he had the Parah Adumah. Anyway, you try to understand it. What's the reason for this? What's the logic? How does taking ashes make somebody clean? I would say it makes you more tameh, makes you more dirty. You pour ashes on somebody, and then the Torah goes on to say, and the guy who prepares it, he actually becomes tameh, and the one that gets sprinkled on, he becomes tahor. So it has like a reverse effect. If you're the one that's involved in it, you become tameh, the one that gets sprinkled. The whole thing is mind-boggling, and that's why the Torah calls it Chukat. What is Chukat? Zot Chukat HaTorah. What is a Chok? I don't know what a Chok is. English. This is the decree. Well, I'll explain you what a Chok is. Chok is a law that we don't understand the rationale to it. Not that there's no rationale to it. If God gave it, there must be a reason. But it's beyond us. It's a Chok. As opposed to, let's say, Kibud Avdaim, you know, honoring your parents. That's understandable. You don't have to be a Gaon to know why you have to honor your parents. A simple fact, they bore you, they brought you into this world, they brought you up, and so on and so forth. So it's only gratitude. That's not a Chok. Whereas, let's say, Sha'atnez, why can't I wear a blend of wool and linen in my garment? I don't know a good reason, to be honest with you. But I know it's forbidden. Nor can I give you a good reason why you're not allowed to eat milk and meat. If I have a glad kosher hamburger, and I have halal Israel cheese, they're both kosher. Individually I can eat them. But also when you put them together, it becomes forbidden. I don't have a good reason to explain to you. So it's a hook. It's just one of those things that, you know, you have to accept. So there's the classic chok of the Parah Adumah. Because that's the one that even King Solomon, who knew a reason for Sha'atnez, and he knew a reason for milk and meat, and he knew reasons for all the other items. When it came to Parah Adumah, even King Solomon raised the white flag. He surrendered. He said, "V'yireh chokam emeni," it's beyond me. Now, King Solomon, the wisest of all men. So if he surrendered to the Parah Adumah, so of course, who are we to say anything? So, if you look at the first Rashi in the Parasha, I came to say a Hadusha that I never said before. If you look, some of you can say, he's coming, we heard that on the Torah.com, right? He's coming, he's giving us reruns. No, I'm giving you something that I never said in your honor tonight. If you look at the first Rashi, Zot Chukat HaTorah. This is the Chok of the Torah. Although I would have thought it would have said Zot Chukat HaPara. I would have thought the Pasuk would have said this is the Chok of the Para. But I think what Torah means over here when it says Zot Chukat HaTorah, it's like this is the quintessential Chok of the whole Torah. There's many Chokim, but this is number one. Zot Chukat HaTorah. Out of all the Chokim, this is the, you know, the major one. And then she writes, לפי שהשטן ואומות העולם, the Satan, אומות העולם is the Goyim, מונים את ישראל. Many people misinterpret this word. מונים, the amateur would explain it, מונים, they count. No, that doesn't make sense here. Satan's not counting us, and the Goyim are not counting us. מונים over here means they taunt us. From the word ona'ah. Ona'at devarim, they taunt us. And what do they say? Lomar, ma mitzvah hazot. They say, what is this mitzvah? Uma ta'am yeshba. What's the logic? They tell us, this is your religion? Religion makes no sense. Lefichach katab b'chukah. That's why the Torah right away says it's a chok. Gezerah hi melefanai. It's a gezerah. It's a statute, it's a decree, and lechad reshut leharer achareha. Period. You can't ask any questions on it. But the goyim, they make fun of us because of the hukim. They come along and say, you know, you people are blind, brainwashed. You're following a law, and nobody can explain it. So they say, matam yeshka. Well, what's the reason? God says, you don't have to answer. Gizira gazarti, it's a decree, and you have no rights to... That's the first Rashi. So it sounds like paraduma, period. Oh, I go a little further, I turn the page. And then all of a sudden I see one of the most beautiful Rashis in the whole Sefer Torah. He says, paraduma. And he starts to tell me a story. He says there was once a king, and there was a little child that came into the palace, crawled into the palace, and the child, forgive me, the child defecated on the floor. And the king says, hey, whose child is this over here that dirtied the soil of the floor? So he said, well, it's so-and-so's, the mother. So the king says, let the mother come and clean up the mess of the child. So that she says, this is from a rabbi called Rabbi Moshe Hadashan, that she says, that's para aduma. Because who's the child of the para aduma? The egel. And the Jewish people worship the golden calf. And the golden calf was like a big dirt on the stain of Klal Yisrael. So God says, who made this mess? Let the para aduma, let the mother come clean up the mess of the egel. That's a beauty. Yeah, it went from becoming a hawk to becoming very, very, very logical. And Rashi writes that the egel is kapara, the para aduma is kapara for the egel. It's a kapara. You know, let one cow atone for another cow, or let the mother atone for the child. So I got confused this afternoon when I was preparing this class over here. I said, hold on, Rashi, you contradicted yourself in one page. First you tell me, halt, don't ask questions. When the goyim come along and they tell you, well, mata, what's the reason? Don't tell them anything. And then on the next page Rashi says, you really want to know the reason? I'll tell you the reason. The reason is because the egg and all that stuff, let the mother come. That's a great reason. By the way, I don't have a reason for Chardonnays, but this is a good reason for paraduma. So, I don't know how you squared these. I'm sure you guys had the same question. I don't doubt it. It's not not to be a genius to think of this question. I'm sure when you were reviewing the parasha in previous years, you were confronted with this, contradiction, and I'm sure you have answers. I'm not saying my answer is the best answer. But nonetheless, I saw in one book today, although I didn't come to say this answer, but there's a rabbi called Kedushat Sion. He answers like this. He said an amazing thing. He said that the Jewish people worshipped the golden calf. What was the root sin of the golden calf? Well, we know they worshipped Avodah Zarah, but what brought them? What brought them to run away from God and to go start doing this idolatry? If you remember the text when they were worshipping the golden calf, it says the people, they saw that Moshe Rabbeinu was delayed. They miscalculated, but they thought he was delayed. So it says, Ki zeh ish Moshe, this guy Moshe, lo yada'nu mehayano. We don't know where he is. Lo yada'nu. The Kedushat Sion says, because they didn't understand something, they said, doesn't make sense. He said 40 days, we counted 40 days, lo yada'nu, hey, we don't know what's going on over here. And because of lo yada'nu, because they didn't understand something in the world, they said, the world doesn't make sense. And therefore it must be a godless world, and therefore let's go do something else, Let's exchange religions. It all started because lo yadanu. And that's a big cause for many people, God forbid, to leave religion. If everything would be so apparent and everything would be so clear and everything would be so obvious, so everybody would be religious. And the reason why people are angry at God and are bitter with God and have claims against God is not for the Adamus. For the Adamus, we're more religious, but it's for the Loy Adamus, for the stuff that we don't understand. You know, we expect the guy all of a sudden, he comes from El Shabbat. Oh, the rabbis told him, if you shomer Shabbat, you're going to become rich and you're going to see the beracha. And the guy shomer Shabbat and his store burns down, God forbid. The guy said, what's going on over here? And unfortunately, we see these contradictions all day long. the world is filled with these lo yadams. Some will say it's a senseless world, that makes no sense in this world, especially when we see tragedies and things of that stuff. We scratch our heads and say, what's going on? You know, if there's a God in the world and he's a good God and he's justice and everything is right, so then why are there children in the hospital? Why people suffer? I mean, so, and everybody, I don't care who you are, those lo yadamus, you know, they go into your head sometimes. I remember once I was in Mexico City, and we were having a Shabbat with the chief rabbi, nice chief rabbi of Jerusalem, Rabbi Shlomo Amar. And the host asked Rabbi Amar if he can talk to a certain woman that's bereaved, and she's very troubled. What had happened? Her son went on his honeymoon. That wasn't the problem, that's a good thing. But he went to, Fiji Island or Indonesia somewhere. And that was the time of the tsunami. And he was on the beach at the time of the tsunami hit. And he got, you know, washed away. The week of the wedding. And this is the mother. So the mother wants to talk to Rabbi Amar to get some clarity. It was a private conversation. Rabbi Amar asked me to sit just in case he needs to help with interpreting myself. And she says, I don't understand. I sent my son on his honeymoon as a groom, and he came home in a coffin. And she starts to, you know, to break down, understandably, from the rabbi. And the rabbi, you saw in his face, he was empathizing with her, you know, he didn't say anything yet. And she just looks at the rabbi and says, I don't understand. The rabbi, you have to explain this to me. Why? And she keeps banging on the table. Why? So the rabbi, I thought, gave the best answer they can give when he told her, it's enough pain that you're going through to have lost your son. Why put yourself now through more agony in trying to understand it? Which means it's painful enough, the event, but now you're going to agonize over why it happened and what's the logic. Don't even go to that place. Don't even go there. It's one of these things that, you know, act of God. You have to just accept it and just don't try to, you know, rationalize it and make sense of it. And, you know, I don't know whatever happened to that lady, but that was the rabbi's advice. But I don't judge her either. I understand Gualin. That's a great track. So that's where everybody struggles. The lo yadamus. You know, why does God do this and why does God do that? And then you get into the contradiction of why do the righteous suffer and why do the wicked prosper? Then you really start to see sometimes how unfair it looks. You know, the guy that does nothing and has the life of Riley, and the guy that does everything, he can't get a break. That doesn't make sense to most people, nor does it make sense to me. And nor did it make sense to the great prophets. So, the root, says the Kiddushat Zion, of the sin of the Eger was, it didn't start off, hey, let's go make a party, let's go make a an event, some type of, you know, carnival, bazaar, whatever they call it. That wasn't the reason. There was a cause that brought them to the Egel. And it starts, hey, something over here doesn't compute. Something over here doesn't add up. Moshe said he's coming back in 40 days. We counted 40. He didn't show up. Lo yadanu mehayalo. Oh, it starts from lo yadanu. Now, who was the root of this Egel? The Erev Rav. The Erev Rav were the riffraff that came out, of Egypt. With the Jewish people. They were converts. They were newly converted, but they still had connections to Egypt, Egyptian culture. Whereas the Jews themselves were not involved in this. They didn't question. You know, the children of Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, the purebreds, they have emunah. Abraham Avinu ve'emin ba'ashem. And we have that legacy. Emunah comes along and says, we believe that God hasn't made a mistake in 5,700 years. And God is perfect. And somebody once said, if God is perfect, why don't we understand Him? And the rabbi answered back and said, you want a God that you understand? Then what makes God's knowledge different than your knowledge? If everything that God did would be predictable, so that means God has your IQ. Why would you want a God that has your IQ? You want a God that's, beyond your comprehension, that's above your understanding. Well, the Jewish people themselves, when it came to the Egel, they didn't question Moshe Rabbeinu. They said, well, Moshe is not here, there's a reason. They didn't know that they counted wrong, but they said, there has to be a reason. We'll figure it out one day. And where did they get that? From Avraham Avinu. God tells Abraham Avinu, you're going to be the father of a great nation. Hard to imagine that. He was married for a lot of years. He was 99, and Sarah was 89, and they still didn't have a child. They had, today they talk about fertility problems. Abraham and Sarah were one of the first couples that had issues in fertility. The Gemara says Sarai didn't even have a womb. I don't think they can solve that today. Today, the lady goes, she has to have a womb at least. Then they can start doing whatever they do. Sarai didn't have a womb, so she didn't have a chance to have a child. And God says, you're going to have a child. They mean, he trusted her. How? It's God's business. And sure enough, he's 100, she's 90. Boom! Yitzhak is born. The word of God comes true, and Avraham Avinu has no questions, and all of a sudden he's at 37 years old, and God says, this is the one that's going to be the father of the great nation, and from him is going to come your progeny, and him is going to come all the blessings, and all of a sudden at 37 years old, God tells Avraham Avinu, go take him now, put him on the Mizbeah. Now if I'm Abraham, and if you're Abraham, you say, hold it, this is a contradiction. How in the world can this one be my progeny? If I have to slaughter one, if I slaughter one in his way out, it's game over. So therefore, one of these two statements cannot exist. They cannot coexist together. It's a head-on collision. If I was Abraham Avinu, I would say to God, hold it, time out. You get three timeouts, you call a timeout. You say, this doesn't reconcile. But Abraham doesn't have any questions. Now, I don't know what Abraham was thinking. Don't tell me, well, he knew God's going to call it off at the last minute. He knew it was just a bluff. He didn't know that. Chas v'shalom. If he knew it was a bluff, so what was the big test of Abraham? Then it's no test. If he knew it at the last minute, God said, okay, I'm just joking. Then you're going to wait. So that was the test. He went through the drama of it. Of course, he thought he has to go through with it. But Abraham, if you go through with it, and then how can you... That's not my problem. That's not my problem to understand how everything's going to work out. My obligation is to serve God. The general tells you to do something. It's not your obligation to understand how this tactic is going to win the war or lose the war. Follow orders. Understanding? Who said you have to understand? We inherited that from Abraham Avinu. This is a very important lesson I'm telling you. In the modern world that we live in, we want to understand everything. Especially now that we have, the internet, you know, the Google, the Shara Gilgulim, and all that. So, I mean, it's very, very, very addictive, because you could know everything. I know it myself, you know, as I'm giving a class, I see guys, you know, Googling the information that I'm saying. They're Googling it. All of a sudden, within 30 seconds, they're experts on the subject, you know. The other day I forgot a rabbi's name or something. I said, oh, there was a rabbi in Mount Kisco. And I said, I forgot his name. Mount Kisco and all that. Of course, you see one guy under the table. I saw him over there. And all of a sudden he said, oh, I think his name is Rabbi Weissmandel. I said, oh, you're a genius. I saw you with your phone underneath the table. I said, how come on Shabbat you never have the answer? Because he can't fool around with his thing. On Shabbat, he's Amar is the guy. The guy's a tipesh on Shabbat. Also during the week, he's fooling around and saying, oh, I think his name is my wife's mantle. Oh, very good. I didn't know that. So today, the information is you can know anything. And you can understand it in 1 second. You type it in and you get an answer. So we're addicted to information and we're addicted to answers. And if we don't get the answer in 3 seconds, already the internet is slow. It's the world's going on. The connection is... So in such a world that we live in, we expect everything to be instant. Instant food, instant delivery of emails, everything is instant. Jet planes, everything is fast. So when we have a question about God, what's the answer? And the rabbi said, I don't know, we're going to see. This doesn't work in our generation. Then you don't know. Go to the next rabbi. Go, so you don't know, we're out. Until you know, this is a problem. When we were young, and I'm sure you do it as parents as well, the mother says to the child, go to your room. And the son says, why? And the mother says, because I said so. A mother doesn't have to explain herself to the child. A mother doesn't have reasons. Because I said, that's enough reason. When our mother said that, because I said so, we understood that. So doesn't God have a right also to say, you do this? Why? Because I said so. Finish. I don't understand. Who's going to understand, by the way? Well, and everything you understand, there was a girl in the seminary that I taught in a few years ago. I was talking about this concept of, you have to accept certain things that are going to be beyond your comprehension. So she came along and said, no, if I don't understand it, you know, I don't do it. I said, no problem. I said, do you take a Tylenol? He says, yes, what's it got to do with anything? I said, you know how a Tylenol works? I have no idea how it works. Well, you just told me that you don't do things if you don't understand what it is. No, that's different. Okay, because you say it's different, I guess. Okay. Because I got you, so it's different. I mean, you fly in a plane, don't you? You know aerodynamics, you know how that works? I still can't figure it out. There's things worth 10 tons and things floating in the air. I throw a penny, it falls down. But the plane flies in the middle of the air for 12 hours. You understand how that works? You understand where, but you fly, you go, it's going to work. So not everything you understand, but you do things. And by the way, I lived 1,000 years old. Don't ask me how the water, when you water a tree, that the water goes from the bottom of the tree to the top leaf. I was taught gravity, things go down. How does the water go up the tree? Well, there's a pump in there, there's a guy in there lifting the water to the top. How does the water go up? If I have water in my basement, the water does not go up to the attic. It doesn't ever happen. It's usually the opposite. The water in the attic goes down to the basement. But in a tree, they tell me, don't you know roots? Okay, roots. Well, how do roots work? Where's the roots? Where's the roots go to anything? Was it a pump? How does the water from the root go climb up against gravity and go to the top of the... You don't understand nothing. As if something you do understand in the world. The whole world is a mystery. One rabbi said to a student that came along and said, this doesn't make sense. Slow down. Before you get to the big things, your stomach, you understand? Stomach, where was stomach? Then what is your question? He says, you know how strong the stomach is? What type of machine it is? If you ladies know this better than anybody, you take a potato, let's say. How long does it take to soften a potato in hot water? I don't know, 10 minutes, maybe more? Something like that. It boils, because a potato is a rock. 10, 15 minutes, you boil it until you make it soft. And let's say a person would eat the potato hard, swallow it. What happens? His stomach will puree it what takes 15 minutes of boiling water, the stomach, will puree and finish it up. So the rabbi said, a potato, it can destroy you. So how come the stomach doesn't eat itself? The stomach is a wall of meat also. How come it only eats strange things. But itself, it knows not to... Okay. Do you understand how your body keeps 98.6 temperature every single second? No thermostat. Here, this shul over here, I'm sure the biggest challenge is to keep the temperature. Nobody's happy ever with the temperature. It's hard to keep a temperature steady. You're always adding vents, fixing the vents. In our shul in Brooklyn, we did something which I think is a good idea for all shuls. We put the main air condition buttons in my office. I only have access to it. Then we put a dummy in the shul over there. So each guy walks in and pushes it. Push it, no problem, no problem. Next guy comes along and says, you don't mind if I push it? Push it, no problem. I go lower, go lower. You've got these high shoes over there. But it's a sketch. And it's the same. Nothing's happening over there. I'm running it in their office over there. So each guy feels like he's high shoes. Anyway, what you see over here, how is the guy living in Hawaii, 110 degrees, his body temperature is 98.6. And the Eskimo living on the North Pole, you take his temperature, it's 98.6. How does body temperature keep itself without a thermostat? All these things we don't understand. But then we accept. When it comes to God, hey, what's the reason? Doesn't make sense. Now we have to know. So the root of Egel was Lo Yada'nu. And that was the Erev Rav. That's the Erev Rav's way of thinking. Yada'nu, I'm religious. Lo Yada'nu, I'm out. But they didn't even have a day. I'm out today. Finish. Lo Yada'nu, I'm out now. They didn't even say, okay, well, wait. Gentlemen, you studied Gemara, I'm sure. Many times in the Gemara will ask a question. Some sort of strong question. Most of the times, the Gemara has an answer to its questions. But a lot of times, the Gemara doesn't answer the question. The Gemara leaves it in the word. It says, you know what the word I'm talking about? Very good, Victor. The Gemara says the word, tiku. What is tiku? Tiku means tiku, no answer. But it's actually an abbreviation. Tishvi ya'ane kushyot u'ba'yot. Eliyahu HaNevi will answer the questions. That means, this question over here, you have to wait for Eliyahu HaNevi. Now guess what? What did the rabbis do when they got to a tikkun? Did they close the book and become Muslims? God forbid. They said, wow, we're going to be Hindus now, because we have a question. They said, okay, put it in the tikkun book, Eliyahu HaNevi will come and answer the question, and we move on. In yeshiva we say, we don't die from questions. Many times, you see in the books, the religious books, you see the rabbis will come along and say, I had this question for 30 years until I got the answer. And during the 30 years, what happened? Nothing. They put it in the back burner and they moved on. But today, or in the young generation, it's not like that. They want everything instant. I want to answer now. And if I can't get an answer, that means the religion is flawed. Must be there's some mistake in the religion. And therefore, now they think that by going somewhere else, they're going to get answers. Where they go, they don't get answers either. That's the irony. They think, okay, fine. And by doing Egil, now you have an answer? It's not like they went to a place that has more information. They went to a place that has chicken. But it's an excuse. People are looking for an excuse to leave God. So that's the root of the Egil. It's a big secret. Lo yada'nu, from the lo yada'nu, they ran away from God because they had one question. If he said he's coming back at 40, and we counted 40, he didn't come back. Now, by the way, they look like big fools, because that's a dumb question, because you counted wrong. I mean, you're expecting, you don't even need a navi for that. You just need somebody who can count. You need a third grader to answer that question. The question of the lady that asked Rabbi Shlomo Amar why her husband died, why her son died in the tsunami, that's a good question. That I can't answer, and the chief rabbi can't answer. That you need Eliyahu Navi. But Lo yadaravaya, when they got the answer, by the way, you counted wrong. Oh, but for this we made a whole tumult. But again, to the one that has a question, unless he has his answer on the spot. So the Kiddush HaTzion says like this. Well, I'll tell you a dirash that's very, very dear to me. King David in his Tehillim, it says, Ish ba'ar lo yeda, uksi lo yavin et zot. He's talking about a fellow that's called the ba'ar. You know what a ba'ar is? Ba'ar is an imbecile. David HaMelech says, the ba'ar, he doesn't understand. Ish ba'ar lo yeda, the ba'ar doesn't get it. Uksil, seals a fool. Uksil lo yavin et zot. He doesn't understand this. What doesn't they understand? Befroach reshaim kemoeset. They don't understand why the wicked flourish like grass. Vayatzitzu kol po'alei aved. All the evildoers are blossoming. The fool and the imbecile can't understand it. Ish ba'al lo yeda uksil lo yavin et zot. And I asked the question once, what do you mean? Only the imbecile can't understand it? Nobody can understand it. And the Hakam understands why the wicked are flourishing? Which, who understands that? What are you blaming it on the fool? The chief rabbi of Israel can't explain it. And all of a sudden, David HaMelech says, oh, the Ba'ar and the Ksil. So I once saw an unbelievable explanation. It says in the Haggadah Shel Pesach, I just read it a few months ago. We have the four kids. The first kid's the Hakam, he wants to know everything. And then you got the Rasha, he's making fun of everything. And you got the She'enu Yodea, the Sha'al, he's quiet, he doesn't ask too many questions. And you have the Tam. Now what's the Tam? And how do you explain Tam?
Naive,
simpleton. Okay, what makes him a simpleton? Well, it says Tam Mahu Omer. Mazot. What's this? Yeah, you simpleton. How's he? That's it. Here's the question. He's not angry at anybody. Not the Rasha. Never chip. He's not the Hakam. He's not asking, a million questions. Yes, he took this for daddy. Mazot. Mazot. Yeah, you Tam. Poor guy. What did he want from the Tam? What did he do wrong? What do you have against the Tam? Explain, the explanation is, there was a guy. He once went to NASA Space Agency. And he's going to get a tour of the whole, yard where they make the spaceships. The shuttles. And they take him into the first room. And, there's a zillion pieces, components and screws and, gadgets and widgets and all stuff all over the place. And they say, there's like, a million different pieces that go into the, and my God, the room is like 2 miles long of stuff over there. And he says, listen, on today's tour, we cannot even go more than this room. We're not going to get out of this room. But there's 10 more rooms like this, but this is where we get. After the 33 hours, they're looking at this room and all the pieces. He says, all right, listen, the tour's over for today. I hope you enjoyed. Do you have any questions? He says, yeah, I have one question. He goes, he picks up a little screw. He says, what do they use this? What is this for? The guy says, you tipesh, you fool, you idiot. That's your question, which is everything else you understood. Until this screw, it's the only thing you don't understand. Meaning, nothing bothers you in this room. Once you got to that, by the way, what do they do with this little cog over here? This is the only, and once I answer this question, now you're good, you go to sleep, you understand everything else? That's a question of a fool. When the Tam is sitting at the seder table, and there's a million things going on. There's Matzah, there's Maror, there's Haros, there's Zeroah, there's the Betzah, there's Haggadah, there's Kosot, there's leaning, pillows. Million things going on. And the father says, do you have any questions? He picks up one little item. Mazot? That's the only question you have? The Hakam at least says, Mahaydut, Hukim, I don't understand nothing. You're Hakam. But when you come along and you pinpoint one item as if to say, this is an item I don't understand. You understand nothing. What do you mean, Mazot? That's a Tam's question. If you look in the Tehillim, what does it say about this fool and imbecile? Ishba'a lo yeda, uchzir lo yavin, it's zot. Which means, the fool, you know why he's an imbecile? You know why he's a fool? Because the only question he has is, why did the wicked prosper? Oh, zot, he found one item he doesn't understand. Everything else you do understand. You're a fool. Which we all have that question. But guess what? It's part of the million questions that we have. But he makes it like that's my only question. As if everything else in the world, the stomach he figured out, the tree he figured out, all the other, you know, enigmas and mysteries of the world, he has. He's just asking, zot. You're asking about zot? You're a ba'al, you're a seal. And that's what happened over here with the people. The motivation of the egel was lo yada'nu. Don't know where Moshe is. So what's the kapara for that? What's the kapara for that? How do you atone for that? The atonement has to be that God has to give you a mitzvah that you're not going to understand, and you have to be willing to subjugate your brain to say, I'm going to do it even though it doesn't make sense. That would be a kapara for the egel. The roots of the egel was, it doesn't make sense. Also, if it doesn't make sense, so therefore you quit. It doesn't make sense, so you retire, you run, you run for your life. So God says, let the mother come clean up the child's mess. The para aduma atones for that, because now you're going to do a mitzvah that nobody knows the reason. You want to talk about lo yada'anu? This is lo yada'anu to the highest degree. And what do the Jewish people do when they get to a lo yada'anu? You do it. Put your head down, you do it. So God says, this philosophy will atone for the other philosophy. So that might be what Rashi means when he gives me the reason for Parah Adumah. The reason is, it undoes the root cause of the Parah. Now what's the first Rashi saying? The Goyim know that the Jewish people are loyal to the Hukim. And because we're loyal to the Hukim, that's why God doesn't punish us for the Egel anymore. The Huk is the atonement. And as long as we keep Hukim, as long as we keep laws that we don't understand, God saves us from the punishment of the Egel. But once already we stop keeping the Hukim, the Egel, like a black cloud, comes over our head. Oh, you're back to that Lo Yadano again stuff? You're back to that old... That means the Hukim actually protect us. You need an atonement for the sin. As long as we come along and we subjugate ourselves and we fulfill the word of God, because He said so. And God said so. No reasons. I don't need a reason. And by the way, be careful of giving reasons. Be very careful once you started getting into the business of giving reasons. You know, somebody came along and said, why does the Torah forbid us to eat pork? My Torah doesn't say a reason, by the way. My Torah doesn't say a reason. It just says you can't eat it. So somebody said, oh, you know why, Rabbi? Trichinosis. Trichinosis. Take your Google out, trichinosis. If you could spell it. Go spell it first. Now to have the spell check, you can get that also. But what even trichinosis is there? Because, you know, in the pig, there's a certain bacteria, and, you know, the Torah is very, very hygienic. And, you know, if you eat the pig over there, they don't want you to catch this parasite or whatever it may be. And that's it. That's the reason. So based on that reason, what do they say? Today that we have the FDA, the Lamed Vav Siddiqim at the FDA, and they come along and they make sure that there's no mad cows and no paradumas and mad paras and all this other stuff, angry paras. They make sure that everything is healthy. And therefore there's no more trichinosis. Trichinosis is old. Nobody gets trichinosis today. So therefore, you can eat pig today, because if the whole reason is trichinosis, no one... Oh, you see what happens over there? Who told you that's the reason? Who told you that's the reason? Once you start putting reasons to the Torah, you limit it now. The reasons are the beginning of the end. Now, I'm not saying that might be a contributing factor to it, but it's not the only reason. Could be trichinosis is one of a thousand reasons. Oh, trichinosis is off the list? Okay, now you have 999 reasons left. But you have to be very careful not to pinpoint and say, this is the exclusive reason. Because once the reason doesn't apply anymore, you're going to take the mitzvah and you're gonna shelf it. And that's a problem. So we don't know reasons. You can't go with the reasons. You know, there was a rabbi called Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. They asked the Kabbalist, Rabbi Shimon. You heard of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, yes? Have you never heard of Rabbi Shimon? You heard of him? He's famous, Rabbi Shimon. I don't know what you guys know. You don't know. I don't know. They asked the rabbi, why is the Mikvah on the eighth day? That's a great question. I never even thought about it. But everybody knows eighth day. Nobody would dare do a Brit Milah on the seventh day. And if the baby's healthy, you know, we don't do it on the ninth day. Although I heard in some communities, and I was shocked to hear this, I think it's in England, they do it on, you know, the closest Sunday after the eighth day, you know, like a Sunday bris. Everybody's off of work. Wow. It's a douche to me. But in the traditional societies, you do the Brit Milah on the eighth day. No matter what, if it's Kippur, it's the eighth day. You do it on Kippur. What's the difference? The eighth day. So they ask the Mishnah, what are your eye? Why? Now, you're not going to believe his answer. You're not going to believe it. You wouldn't think a Kabbalist like the Mishnah would give such an answer. But he answered. What did he say? Huh? He didn't go into the clotting. You're right. That's the medical answer. That's what the guy in in Harvard answered. But the Bishamon, he said different. He said, because when a lady gives birth to a baby boy, she becomes ritually impure for 7 days. Torah says, V'tame'ah shema chemin. And then she goes, in the olden days, she goes to the mikveh on the seventh night after she gives birth, and then she's pure again. And therefore, on the eighth day, she's permissible to her husband. So he says, imagine if you do the Brit Milah on the seventh day, everybody would be at the party, happy, and the husband can't even touch his wife for pictures. You know, can't even hand the baby to him. So the Mishnah says, they waited to the eighth day after she went to the mikveh, and everybody's happy now. Nah, turn this way, turn that way, and that's right. You say, what? That's the reason for Brit Milah? So the husband and the wife, she won't be nidah at the bris. Wow, I would think of such a reason. And now you say, hold on. Today, the lady gives birth, she doesn't go to the mikveh until 6 weeks after. Also, they have a new law. Milah in today, Rabotai, see in 6 weeks. If it's 6 weeks, if it's 10 weeks, and the kid's 2 years old, they're 2 years old. Whenever the lady goes to the mikveh, and if she decides she's not going to the mikveh anymore, that's it. The kid will no milah. I mean, that's what happens if you start giving reasons. Now, the Bishamon Bar Yochai, I wasn't saying this is the ultimate reason of Brit Milah or klaring. That's not the ultimate reason. Ultimately, the reason for Brit Milah on the eighth day, only God knows. The Zohar HaKadosh will say because they want the baby to pass through a Shabbat. Because the Kiddush of Shabbat will protect the baby that he should survive the Brit Milah. So, automatically, by doing it on the eighth day, for sure the child has to pass one Shabbat at least. Okay, it's all good stuff. All good stuff. But we don't, we don't commit to any reasons. Because once you start saying this is the reason, you'll figure out a case where the reason doesn't apply, and sure enough, you'll be eating pork, and you'll be not circumcising your children, and you'll have a big yarmulke on your head. And you'll say, I'm following the, going after the reasons. So you should never get involved in the reason business. So why do you do the mitzvot? Because God said so. God doesn't owe us an explanation. Don't you understand that? Who are we? We're not creators, we're creations. You know, we forget who we are. I remember when I was young, we went up to the Empire State Building. You go up to the observatory deck and you look down. And you look at the people, they look like, the taxis are like matchbox cars. And you see everybody looks like, I'll never forget, there was a taxi that there was like a fender bender. And you see these little two midges in this, waving their hands, yelling, these two bugs over here. So could you imagine how we look from God's vantage point? And we come here big shots, we're fighting, we're talking, what's the reason? Oh, midges, they don't ant over here. He has a say all of a sudden. Who is he? What is he? He has a claim. Why? What are you talking? From God's vantage point, we're very small. So the reasons, ultimately you have to keep it to that because it's a hook. Now I'm not saying it's not good to know logic for things, but you always have to put logic as a second backup. But your religion never rests on the logic. Because if it's going to rest on logic, when the logic fails, the religion is going to fall. The way I understand logic and rationale, it's like this building over here. The building stands on the pillars that you don't see behind this wall. That's how the building stands. That's emunah, fulfilling the law, because God said. The paint and all the trimmings, that's extra. But that's not what the building stands on. Get rid of the trimmings, the building doesn't fall. Get rid of the beams, the building collapses. Emunah in the religion, because God said, is the beam. Everything else is, nice and easy. You have it. You don't have it. It's not a deal breaker. I am very, very fond of the following mashal of the Hafetz Chaim. I'm very impressed that you accepted upon yourself to come to this field. Victor told me that it's the first time in this synagogue that a rabbi has been given 3.5 hours to give a class on a Tuesday night. We're not even an hour in, and Baruch Hashem, everybody's concentrating, everybody's listening. We only have 2.5 hours to go, so I mean, the school of mitzvot, we appreciate it. So what happens? There was a king, and he had an ambassador, and he told the ambassador, "I want you to go represent us." Okay, where am I going? You're going to go to the following country. There's going to be a meeting. It's going to be a short meeting you're going to have with the king of that country. And you'll come back and you'll give me the report. So, okay, fine. Before you leave, but I want you to come to me. I have one instruction for you. The ambassador gets dressed. He gets a suitcase, everything. He comes to the king. The king says, okay, just have one instruction for you. When you go there, don't make any bets. Bets? What do you mean? I don't bet. I'm not a gambler. Listen, what I told you. No matter what happens, you don't make any bets. He said, okay, it's easy enough. He goes. He gets there. They tell the king in the other country, the ambassador from so-and-so came to see you. Please bring him in. He comes in. He sees, you're the ambassador of... Yes. He's, I'm shocked. Why are you shocked? He says that the king of that country would send an ambassador who's a hunchback. Out of all people, why does he send me a hunchback? He says, I'm not a hunchback, I'm a regular guy. He says, it doesn't matter. You're a hunchback, but it's fine. He says, no, I'm telling you, I'm not a hunchback. He says, listen, it is what it is. It doesn't bother me if it doesn't bother you. He says, no. I'm not telling you. So the king says, I'll bet you $1 million that you're a hunchback. Now he says to him, well, the king said, don't wager. But this is a shoo-in. This is a guaranteed bet. I know I'm not a hunchback. So the guy says, but he said, don't wager. But he says, why did he say don't wager? Because he doesn't want me to lose. But I'm going to win. And guess what? I'm going to give him $1 million to the king. So he can't be angry. He says, you got a bet. So the king says, no problem. Take off your shirt. Let's see if you're a hunchback. Takes off his shirt. The king looks. Hatati aviti fashati. You're not a hunchback. My mistake. Pay the man $1 million. They take a suitcase with $1 million cash. Good luck. They have their meeting. They go home. He walks to the king. He says to the king, the king's had the meeting go. The meeting was very good. We discussed this and that. By the way, I have something for the king. What do you have? Gives him. Opens up. $1 million cash. $1 million cash from? He says, please. Don't even add, it's for the king, I don't want a dollar. I don't even want ma'aseh. You keep the whole thing. He said, I don't understand where you get this from. He said, what should I tell you? The king told me I'm a hunchback. And then he bet me. He said, don't tell me you bet. He said, well, I won. He says, just answer me one question. Did he tell you to take off your shirt? said, of course. He said, you fool, I bet the king $5 million that he won't be able to take off his shirt. Then I said, now I'm out $4 million. Didn't I tell you don't bet? What's the problem? He started to give reasons. He didn't want me to bet because once you start giving reasons, it's like you have a worker in your store. Once they start thinking and using their own brain, they ruin the whole business. The worker is only good when he doesn't use his brain. You tell the guy, go to the bank. Go to the bank. Did you go to the bank? No, I'll go tomorrow. What did you go tomorrow? Because I figured, who asked you? I'm not paying you to figure. You're paid to follow orders. Once you add your own 2 cents into it, you mix up everything. It's the same thing in religion. God says, I told you to do this, this, this. Why don't you do it? Well, I thought, that's the problem you're thinking. So, I'm not saying it's not good to have understanding. Oh, so now we go back. Certainly, I'm going to conclude with this. Certainly, Para Aduma has a reason. And the reason is what Rashi says. It's to fix the fact that their sin was based on Lo Yada'nu. They couldn't understand God. So God says, the fixing of that is that you must fulfill a law that is the paradigm of not understanding. And Rashi, in the beginning, says, Lefi shel Satan ve'umot ta'olam, the Satan and the Goyim monim et Yisrael. They taunt the Jewish people. Now watch how we're learning Rashi. Lomar. Lomar means not that they say. Lomar, they want us to say. Ma mitzvah hazot umata'am yeshba. Because the Goyim know if they get us to say what's the reason, then the egel will come back on our head. So therefore, when they try to come and tell us, come on, say it. It makes no sense. Nefish ha-satan v'omot ha-monim et Yisrael lomar. They want us to say, ma mitzvah hazot umata'am yeshba. Because once we start questioning, it makes no sense. Oh, you're back to that makes no sense. Bring back the eagle out of the guinea's arm. Bring back the eagle back. And now you're back to the avon. And this is the great lesson. And that's why zot chukat ha-Torah, it's the principle of the Torah itself. It's the principle of your mother. Because I said so. You don't need to understand that. And guess what? Don't be the imbecile that needs to understand one item and you still don't understand the other zillion. So what the other? As if once you get the answer to that question, now you understand all the other components of the space shuttle. Therefore, better to just keep quiet, be loyal to the service of God. And guess what? One day, when all those rabbis are standing online to Eliyahu Navi to answer, I'm gonna have a lot of questions to ask Eliyahu Navi as well. And it's not from the Gemara. It's from personal life. But the Arabi never have you on the line. Explain me that tsunami story. Explain me why the Shomesh Shabbat had a problem. Explain me. And he's going to give you the answer. And guess what? The answer in a lot of the cases is going to be as obvious and as simple as the answer to the Eged. You just miscalculated. You counted wrong. It's going to be a simple answer. And it's going to be just as a simple answer of Avraham Avinu. When God told Avram, take him down off the Mizbeah. So Avram tells God, I don't understand. Now could you explain me the contradiction? Now that I passed the test, could you explain me? You told me, put him on the Mizbeah. And you told me at the same time he's going to be my progeny. He says, exactly. What did I tell you? Ha'alehu. Bring him on the Mizbeah. I never told you to slaughter him. Ha'alehu. Put him on the Mizbeah and take him off. You understood ha'alehu means I never said slaughter. The Pasuk never said slaughter. I said ha'alehu. Now, what do you do? Of course, after the game is over, how come I didn't think of that? Of course, when you're going through it, you didn't think of it. And that's why it was a test. So sometimes the answer is going to be so simple that you're going to say to yourself, what was I even contemplating? And the lesson to us is to serve God. Logic is good, but it's not the foundation. The foundation is because I said so. The foundation is because it's the Word of God. And we're very small, and we don't deserve an interpretation. If somebody comes and says, "Brit Milah is because of this," nice. Trichinosis, all nice. But don't lock yourself into a reason. And then, Be'ezat Hashem, we give our religion an endurance. And then the religion has a long shelf life. And that's the lesson of Parah Adumah. Okay, stop over here.